This is The After Party, live with Jim McAllister and John Daly.
Yeah, happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm making my way through it. It's good.
Making my way. What song is that? That's from a TV show,
making
right?
Making my way in the world today with everything I've got. Is that
what
it?
What is that?
I don't know. Wouldn't you like to get away?
Oh, that's Cheers.
Cheers. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that we have that settled.
Moving on.
Sorry for singing. I'm good. How are you?
Tell me how you are? You're good. Okay.
I'm good. All good over here. Okay. Kids are in school. Nobody's homesick today.
Oh, so you're really good.
Yeah.
It feels like they're either in school or home at sick. Homesick. It's like one of the two. What is that? It sounds like a scam. Like either way, you've got to do stuff. You got to drop them off or you got to tend to them.
That's the way it goes.
This whole parenting thing sounds like a scam and I don't want any part of it.
Lucky for you, you're out.
I was never in. What's our lead story today, Kim?
We have a lead story that includes a kangaroo stampede on a golf course. Yeah, it's never good. You're going to miss your tee time. It's not going to work out for you. I would ask you if you could click the like button. We would appreciate that if you're on your way in. Thank you for being here. But let's talk about this golf game being interrupted. This happened, of course, in Australia, right?
Right.
Victoria, Australia. The golf games had to be interrupted, put on hold, when the stampede of kangaroos came hopping on through the golf course. They posted this video to social media showing, they call it a fair dinkum stampede of kangaroos that appeared during the game of golf at the Heritage Golf and Country Club. They said, we've had a kangaroo or two here and there on the course, but they've never seen anything like this before. This is a lot of kangaroos. Do we have video?
We don't have video, but okay. We do have a picture.
This is good.
Here you go.
Yeah, that's a lot of, it almost looks doctored. There's so many on there. They
like
kind of almost
like a royal photo.
Exactly. It looks like they're hopping in straight lines.
If you see those tails there, they look like they've been manipulated.
My God. They said it's a parade of ruse, and it felt like it went on forever and ever. They just hopped and hopped and hopped and wouldn't leave. So eventually it all worked out. They're gone. But that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. I heard you guys talking about the royal photo that was doctored. Mm-hmm. And I think people are getting it confused. It's not about the family photo being doctored. It's that it was sent to the press pool.
Right.
And the press, all these agencies have very strict rules because it's photojournalism.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't submit something that's not real. So it's apples and oranges. It's not like, oh, you can't modify your own photo. And I saw some photos on the Telegraph over in England. It's not just one spot. It's like four different spots. And they show the zoom in. You can zoom in. You can see like part of the sleeve is missing, right? Mm-hmm. So it was totally doctored in four different spots. It's not that you can't modify your own photos. It's that you can't submit something to a press agency.
To the official, yes.
Yeah, those
without
are strict rules of photojournalism.
That
that's important. Same
without
rules
saying that it's been modified, right?
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, that's important for our.
Especially now with AI pictures and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't want anybody doctoring any news. We don't want anybody doctoring war photos. So it's a bigger concern, a bigger issue, and they have to be strict about that. So I thought that was important to note. Housekeeping. Please leave a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use to get the audio podcast. And even if you're not on the audio podcast, if you can head over there and give us a review, that would help the show's visibility. If you love the show, please don't give us 2 stars. Somebody gave us 2 stars and gave us a glowing review.
Yeah.
So please don't do that. Did you see Disneyland is in the news?
They are being sued by more than 100 current and former employees in the hotels. It is a class action lawsuit. This is a big one. The lawsuit, apparently against Disneyland, alleges that they required maintenance workers at the hotels to provide their own tools and equipment. What do you mean? You should go to work. Don't you think there's a maintenance room where they give you all that stuff?
Is this the Seven Dwarves with the pickaxes?
I guess so. They have to bring their own. Bring your own pickaxe. Under California law, employers have to pay at least twice the minimum wage if they require you to bring your own tools to the job. This lawsuit says that not only did Disney fail to do that, they didn't provide the required rest periods or accurate wage statements either. So 115 other employees who worked at as maintenance engineers or assistants maintenance engineers join an assistant maintenance engineer at the Disneyland Hotel to file suit in the Orange County Superior Court. They say, the lawyers for the plaintiffs say, these folks are told to cover the expense of tools used on behalf of Disney, who flouts the law and refuses to pay its workers what they are due.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, not good.
That was Mockingbird Mickey.
Oh, it sounded like Mickey.
Yeah, but it was a Mockingbird Mickey.
Oh, Mockingbird Mickey. They say Disney knows the law, but just like their character Uncle Scrooge, they choose to be cheap.
The thing about doing the Mickey Mouse voice is it comes and goes. My friend and I, when we first started doing, we did it at Disneyland, and we were just kind of yelling and screaming and doing our Mickey voice.
Sure.
And then you kind of lose it. It's one of those things that you're just like, oh boy. But you have to practice it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, this is not the only lawsuit that Disney is facing from their employees. They have another major labor lawsuit. This one, 9,000 female employees sued the company over alleged pay disparities. And they also faced a lawsuit over their whole Magic Key Pass system. That one they settled in last year, with more than 100,000 pass holders eligible for a payout as part of the settlement. So far, they haven't commented on this maintenance worker lawsuit, but yeah. Ooh.
Ooh, you know what I want to comment on? West T with $5. Happy Monday, everybody. I'm tired. Oh, yeah. Time change. Did that hit you?
Yeah.
We lost an hour?
I think it hit everybody. Yeah. Ooh, I'm tired too. Thank you, Wes, and thank you for supporting the shows today. I saw this is not the only show that you contributed to. You are appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wes.
Yeah.
And then we maybe just quickly before we move on, somebody is asking what happened on Friday. To revisit that, I don't know if it's traumatic for you.
I thought we left that in the past.
Well, some people are asking what happened. So,
my internet service was disconnected on Friday for upgrades, and I knew it was coming, so I tried to tape the Nicki Maduro show, but it didn't get added into the system properly. We couldn't figure out
for a lack of trying.
We tried really hard, and then
at 4 a.m. in the morning,
John was even trying to help me with that, so that messed up. Then on the Mark Thompson show, I went to a coffee shop and I was trying to do the show remotely by phone, and I clicked this button that says leave studio. And it wasn't the end broadcast button. It was a leave
which
studio
are on
button.
Opposite corners of the screen.
And the whole show was derailed. And so they had to bring in a second show and add it to the first. It was a mess. And then on this show, my internet kept going in and out. And I thought it was working. And then it wasn't. So I had to go by phone. Anyway, big mess. Bad day. It's over. Party over.
Yeah. And when I put the audio podcast out, I cut out some of that weirdness. Yeah. But yeah, these things happen, and you just have to persevere.
Roll with the punches. And then my bad luck spread to you that day on Friday.
Yeah, so because then I get two emails, one from each of our lawyers on two separate cases involving my family's property. And I get those, and I'm, like, overwhelmed because they're not working. They're not purposely sending me stuff at the same time, but I just got, like, an avalanche of things I have to review, and then I have to coordinate with my sister, and I have to so my weekend, and I just think, oh, you know what, I'm gonna put this on hold. I'm just gonna chill out. I'm gonna go grocery shopping at Costco. And I go get my car, and I drive a block and a half away, and I happen to have my windows down, and I hear the flop 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 flat tire, and I look, and it's a screw. So I literally got screwed on Friday.
We all got screwed.
So that was your bad day. Yeah, spreading,
seeping over into your life. Sorry about that.
Speaking of things that are, I don't know, not so popular, people
California
don't want to get screwed.
California forever.
California forever. You remember, this is the name of the group of billionaires that wants to create the new city in Solano County next to Travis Air Force Base, Fairfield, and Sassoon. You can see Fairfield and Sassoon City on the far right there. You can see Travis is kind of like that runway on the right hand side, you know, with that, and there's a green zone there. Well, California Forever releases a new map of proposed Bay Area utopian city. The would-be architects of a sprawling Bay Area utopia in rural Solano County have released this map of the city's borders. The map gives an aerial view of where the city would fit into the larger Bay Area. So it took me a second to realize this is looking kind of like southwest. So San Francisco is across in the middle there, right? And so the East Bay is up on the left side. So we're looking south-southwest, right? It's kind of a, it's not a view, it's not a perspective we're used to looking at, right? So Vallejo's right there on the top as well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they're showing how close it would be to Travis Air Force Base there on the right, that light green area. And that's a major point of contention. And, you know, because we thought it was a security concern, you know, people thought maybe politicians were thinking maybe China was buying up property, right? Mm-hmm. So you can see a compact area of neighborhoods anchored by parks between Rio Vista and Fairfield. You know what? The first thing I noticed about this, do you remember the initial renderings? They made it look like the Tuscany. Rolling hills mm-hmm. of Tuscany.
Right.
As far as I know, and I'll double check, that's all relatively flat land right there. So, I mean, this is what they do, right? You start with a huge promise, right? And then you kind of, once you get that approved, people accept it. Then the next version is going to be like not as hot, right? And then the next version is probably going to be strip malls. Do you know where I'm going with this? Like, so as soon as they get it through and passed, it's probably just going to turn into a regular city. Now, what I did get, and I can play for you, I have a video of their ad. So they're trying to convince Solano voters that this is a good idea, okay? And here is their pitch that they're airing on TV, or it will be soon. And are we not getting audio?
No sound. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can still see it. They have all these people here asking questions. You know, is this going to be good for jobs? Is this going to be good for neighbors? And they're saying this farmland is some of the worst in Solano County. You know, I'm sure they're selectively showing these two places that don't look so hot. And they're saying, a new day is rising Solano County. This will... create jobs. Actually, I could just read the closed caption. Place for walkable middle-class neighborhoods. Now, do you really think it's going to look like this? I don't think it's going to look like this. They're saying $400 million in down payment assistance for Solano residents. New jobs, 15,000 new jobs with good pay and manufacturing technology. I don't think they can really promise that. Here you could see the city would be the blue area, Travis Air Force Base to the left, up on the top left there. And that green area would be a zone of just agricultural areas and solar panels. So anyway, they're making the big push. They have to get signatures, you know, to get this on the ballot. And basically, they have to get voters to approve development of agricultural land, which is not allowed in Solano County right now.
Yeah.
So I just want to provide an update. Billionaires are going to billionaire.
As they right? do. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about animals because I miss our animals. This dog, you know, sometimes animals get things stuck on their heads. So we've talked about this before, right? This little dog spent months with the box stuck on his head. Months. I don't know how he managed to eat, drink, what have you, but he's finally gotten a new home. He's free. He's free of the box. His name is Bear, and he was spotted on the Gulf Coast on multiple occasions with this box stuck on his head. He was apparently wandering around for several months before rescuers were able to get him and take the box off of his head. And now they have put him at the city's animal shelter, and now he has a permanent home with an animal advocate that works closely with someone at the animal services in this area.
Yeah, he's an employee. He's a volunteer, and he comes. Mm-hmm. So the dog is their kind of mascot, and he lives at home with the employee, and then he shows up every day at the animal shelter, mm-hmm. which is cool, right?
Yeah, animal services ambassador is his new job, and he spends his days greeting the public at the city shelter before going home at night and having a forever home at night. So that's nice.
Very cool. Yeah. California forever, dogs forever.
That's right.
What about swans forever?
That's a pretty picture. Wow.
Yeah, entangled swan rescued from a fishing line in England. Animal rescuers in England saved a swan seen struggling in a lake with fishing line tangled around both legs. This animal rescue said on social media that the Egyptian goose, that's what we're looking at, dubbed Elena, was reported by members of the public who saw her struggling to free her legs from the fishing line on Brooklyn Lake. You know where that is. The rescuers said Elena, who had baby geese in her care, was wary of the rescuers, and it took multiple attempts for them to get close enough to catch her. They came equipped with what they call a swan ambulance kit and plunged into the cold water to reach the struggling bird. The fishing line was removed, and Elena's wounds were cleaned before she was returned to her babies. That's Aww. A good story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Very people cool. helping. How about this sheep that... You know,
sometimes it's sheep helping.
Have you ever seen these animal stories where they're unlikely friends, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of like that.
They're partners in crime.
Right. This sheep helped this horse through a dental visit. I guess the horse wasn't really having a very good visit to the dentist, as is wont to happen, right?
This must have been a deep cleaning.
It must have been, it was something. So tooth pulling, I don't know what. Jojo, a 19-year-old Shire horse mare, needed an hours-long specialist treatment on her teeth last week. And she spent the entire session with Hetty, the black sheep, snuggled right underneath her. So sweet. Look at Hetty's right underneath her. She's like, I'm here for you. I got you. You're okay. Aww. Animals' owners are from Anglesey. They say this pair are inseparable. Vets say they've never seen anything like this.
That's cute.
Yeah. They say Hetty won't leave Jojo at all. As we were loading Jojo for the trip to the dentist, she was straight up the ramp right into the horse box, as if she was trying to say, nope, Jojo's not going on her own. When they got to the dentist, Hetty stayed with Jojo, even though there were no gates or fences in place to stop her from running around the building. She was right there. The vet says, I've been doing this for 28 years, and I've never seen a horse and a sheep so bonded. These two are inseparable. When Jojo was being treated in the stocks, Hetty came in, stood for the whole hour of treatment right under Jojo's legs. They say it's a really beautiful relationship that started a year ago when Jojo's mother died and her owners brought Hetty from a nearby farm for companionship. They play together. They run around the field together. And they say Hetty bounces around like Pepe Le Pew. They think it's really cute. That's a sweet story.
Very cool. And yeah. Very cute. Let me see if I can get that photo down for a second. Let's see. Kathleen is pointing out that was not a swan. That was an Egyptian goose. You know what? Kathleen, you're right. I was reading from the UPI. So we were talking about the press agencies getting things right. They go back and forth calling it a swan and a goose, and it is a goose. So Kathleen is right.
Egyptian
we like to give credit
goose.
Where credit's due, right?
It was really pretty, though.
Don't confuse your geese with your swans.
Please, if you could click like, we would appreciate it. And if you could share the show on social media to help us spread the word, that would be great, too.
Our shorts got really good views. I think record views on Friday. We did four shorts, and they all got over 400 for the first time. So that's over 1,600. And that helps us get... Yeah. That helps us get new viewers. So that's really
cool. If you are here but haven't subscribed, please click the subscribe button as well.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Click like, subscribe, share the show. You're good to go. Right on.
You're good to go until AI takes over.
And then we're all screwed.
You may be asking yourself, who is this? That was my question. This is a top scientist. Those are the best ones, don't you think? Top scientist warns that AI could surpass human intelligence by 2027.
Don't you love the top tech scientist? He's got like a raggedy old polo and a weird hat. Like these are tech people, right?
He looks like your Croc Hunter's like associate, right? 2027, that's a lot sooner, right? It's 2024, that's 3 years from now, decades earlier than previously predicted. The computer scientist and CEO who popularized the term artificial general intelligence, AGI, that's this guy, I guess, believes AI is verging on an exponential intelligence explosion. The PhD mathematician and futurist Ben Gortzel made the prediction while closing out a summit on AGI this month. It seems quite plausible that we could get to human-like, at a human-level AGI within, let's say, the next 3 to 8 years. Once you get to human-level AGI, he's sometimes called the father of AGI, within a few years, you could get a radically superhuman AGI. While the futurist admitted that he could be wrong, we went on to predict that the only impediment to a runaway ultra-advanced AI, far more advanced than its human makers, would be if the bot's own conservatism advised caution. Oh, that would be the worst, if all of a sudden your bot turns into a MAGA supporter.
Oh,
I don't think that's what he means. Your AI comes out with a red hat. Oh, we're screwed. So this was at a conference. These were at the closing remarks at last week's 2024 Beneficial AI Summit, an unconference partially sponsored by his own firm, SingularityNet. That doesn't sound ominous at all, where he's the CEO. There are known unknowns and probably unknown unknowns. Oh, wait, I know that phrase. That's from the Bush administration.
It is?
There are none known unknowns and probably unknown unknowns. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You don't remember that?
No.
That was our Secretary of Defense.
Oh, great.
You don't remember that?
Mm-mm.
Rumsfeld. That was Donald Rumsfeld.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I thought that was disconcerting.
Mm. Yeah, that is a little disconcerting. I don't know. It's scary that, and it's kind of, I don't get how we can build something that is smarter than us when we're the one programming it. You would think it would reach our level.
No, because you're programming it to teach itself. To learn. It's different. That's the key. The key is it's like building a child. You know, like imagine if you built your child piece by piece and you designed it to learn like it does, right? On its own. You don't tell it what to do. Well, you try to, right? But it doesn't always follow instructions.
Wes, with a good question. Once it's smarter than humans and self-aware, is it considered alive?
Oh, now we're in an episode of Star Trek. Data.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Lori says, we don't know what we don't know. Right. Well, we don't know.
And once you appreciate the fact that there's a lot of things you don't know. I feel like the more you learn, the more you realize, oh, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
You know what we do know?
We do know
something about touchscreens in cars.
Well, it turns out, and this is a big shocker, that maybe putting a touchscreen where you have to actually manipulate the screen while you're driving in a vehicle isn't the best move for safety. Mm-hmm. Cars are going to need fewer screens and more buttons if they want to earn a 5-star rating in Europe.
Oh.
That is because car makers in Europe are being encouraged to stop using touchscreens for basic functions like turn signals and wipers. And this is all to promote safer driving. The Times, the new European car assessment program, an independent, well-regarded safety body for the automotive industry, they say, is introducing new rules in January of 2026, requiring vehicles it assesses to have physical controls in order to receive the full 5-star safety rating. So I think some vehicles, I think Tesla might be one of them, you have to do things on this touch screen.
Oh yeah, it's
right?
Like a computer. Is that a Tesla? That looks like the screen. It's a large computer screen.
But if you're doing things on the screen and, you know, focusing on what to touch and where to touch, you're not looking at the road.
I should make a distinction. Like I have a Honda and not as fancy. It has a 7-inch screen, which isn't that big, but it's not for watching things. I think technically you can hook it up for your kids to watch something like video, but that's not what it's primarily for. It's your radio, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a touch screen, but it's like basically buttons, right? I think that's safe. Like you're just hitting the preset buttons. Mm-hmm. It might as well just be a radio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's different.
That's different than a little 7-inch screen where you're just pushing buttons versus this where you're like selecting which movie you want to watch.
Also, you don't need to listen to the radio, but you do need your blinkers.
Yes, you do. Oh, wait.
You
oh, not
do
anymore.
Need your windshield wipers. Like things that are, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's also different because you don't want something that crashes, right?
Right. They're the things that you have to use. There's, you know, necessities to drive.
Yeah.
The radio, sadly, isn't one of them.
Well, this is something you learn in the technology world. A lot of times companies make things more complicated because they're fancy and they're cool and it's got that whiz-bang kind of effect to it. But when you add extra complication, you make things complex. Well, guess what? Now you have something new that's going to break.
Well, the overuse of touchscreens is an industry-wide problem, they say, with almost every vehicle maker moving key controls onto these central touchscreens, which force drivers basically to take their eyes off the road, and that raises the risk of distraction and then crashes. And it's not good. So that's why they're saying, we're not giving you a 5-star safety rating anymore.
Yeah.
Unless you have buttons, dials, or levers for hazard warning lights, indicators, windscreen wipers, the SOS call, and the horn.
Right. And this is like an advanced computer, and it has to have software, and software has glitches. I'll give you a good example. My Honda, luckily it's just the radio, but the radio got stuck listening to The Bone, our sister station, when I was driving into KGO every morning. And I joked with them. I'm like, how did you hack my car? I can't change the channel. I'm only listening to The Bone, right? Rock and roll music. But imagine if that was a more vital system, right? And the computer just locks you out.
Yep.
What are you going to do?
There are manufacturers like Tesla and Volkswagen. They have a reputation for putting these touchscreen interfaces in the vehicles. A lot of people complaining about it. Yeah. But the car manufacturers are still pushing the touchscreen interfaces because they're more cost effective than all these physical buttons and dials. So that's why they're going all touchscreen, right?
Yeah.
The safety guidelines for the Euro NCAP aren't a legal requirement, but if they take the ratings pretty seriously, then right. they'll actually comply with it. So that's why they're saying we're not giving you the safety rating.
NSTARS is confirming that is a Tesla 3 interior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, so. I've seen those screens. You can see them from outside, you know, when you're looking at this car that mm-hmm. yeah, costs a lot of money. Yeah. Let's go back to AI. Ready to go back to AI?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Microsoft engineer warns, here's another warning, that their company's AI tool creates violent sexual images and ignores copyrights. Oh, man. I feel like this is going to take over our lives for like the next 10 years and further, actually. On a late night in December, Shane Jones, an artificial intelligence engineer at Microsoft, felt sickened by the images popping up on his computer. Jones was noodling around with Copilot Designer, which is the name of their software. It's an AI image generator that Microsoft debuted in March of 2023, powered by OpenAI's technology. Like OpenAI's DALL-E, which creates images, users enter text prompts, right? So you type in some words and it turns it into a picture, right? Creativity is encouraged to run wild. Since the month prior, Jones had been actively testing the product for vulnerabilities, a practice known as red teaming. In that time, he saw the tool generate images that ran far afoul of Microsoft's off-sited responsible AI principles. The AI service has depicted demons and monsters alongside terminology related to abortion rights, teenagers with assault rifles, sexualized images of women in violent tableaus, and underage drinking and drug use. All those scenes generated in the past 3 months have been recreated by CNBC this week using the tool, which was originally called Bing Image Creator. It was an eye-opening moment, Jones said, who continues to test the image generator. When I first realized, wow, this is really not a safe model. He worked at Microsoft for 6 years and currently is a principal software engineer at corporate headquarters in Redmond. He says he doesn't work on Copilot in a professional capacity. Rather, as a red teamer, Jones is among an army of employees and outsiders who, in their free time, choose to test the technology and see where the problems are. And it says Microsoft's legal department told Jones to remove his post immediately, he said, and he complied. In January, he wrote a letter to U.S. senators about the matter and later met with staffers from the Senate's Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. Now he's further escalating these concerns, sent a letter to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and another to Microsoft's board of directors, and shared it with CNBC. So, you know, all these companies are trying to, it's a race to be number one, right? And we got to keep our eye on this stuff. You're muted, Kim. Hope that's not commentary on the presentation.
No, sorry. Sorry about that. I was coughing. Yeah.
Especially and the images of children and sexual violence.
Gross. Women. No.
Yeah. Got a bunch of nerds creating this crap.
You know, I'm concerned about microplastics.
Okay.
And I saw this article that I thought was worth talking about, that microplastics could raise the risk of stroke and heart attack. So we've known that we've been ingesting these microplastics for a while, right?
Yeah. Up to credit card's worth of weight of plastic.
Yeah, yeah. Week. And so, but we didn't exactly know what would happen to our bodies if we were ingesting these things.
Not good things?
Not good things at all. Doctors are warning of potentially life-threatening effects from plastic pollution after finding a substantially raised risk of stroke, heart attack, and even earlier death in people whose blood vessels were contaminated with microscopic plastics. So gross. So researchers in Italy examined fatty plaques that were removed from the blood vessels of patients with arterial disease. And they found that more than half had deposits contaminated with tiny particles of polyethylene or polyvinyl chloride, PVC. And those people whose plaques contained microplastics or nanoplastics were nearly 5 times more likely to suffer a stroke, a heart attack, or death from any cause over the following 34 months compared to those whose plaques were free from plastic contamination. So the findings apparently don't prove definitively that plastic particles drive stroke or heart attack, But they do indicate that people who are more exposed to that kind of pollution might be at greater risk for other reasons. I don't know. The data, they say, dramatically impacts cardiovascular health if confirmed, because we're defenseless against plastic pollution. Obviously, we can't control it. People aren't, you know, cooperating as far as not using plastic as much. And so it means
it's virtually impossible to remove plastic. Everything is packaged in plastic. Everything.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And so even if, like me, you've tried to take all plastics out of your kitchen, you still, when you buy things, have to realize what's coming in plastic is, you know, still coming into your house.
And a lot of things you don't see, like medical, you know, vaccines. Mm-hmm. And I'm just pulling this out of my head, my head, not the other end. Yeah. There's things that you don't see behind the scenes. They're all packaged in plastic too, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just you. Our entire society is packaged in plastic.
Yeah, and it's not just us. It's all around the planet. And so they say even if society did succeed in cutting our plastic pollution, the health benefits from that cleanup wouldn't be seen for years. So we're in it. You know, we're contaminated now. We've done this to ourselves.
No plastic, no Diet Coke, no Coke Zero.
Right.
No THC.
There's a reason this place is fun. Yeah.
Oh, man. Do we have any good news? Let's see.
I have even more. I have another plastic story for you.
Oh, no.
Because I found two in a row and I thought, oh, that's weird. Well, this actually a very similar story about microplastics in the artery plaque. So I'll cease and desist. But they said they found plastic inside more than 50% of plaques from clogged arteries. So,
yeah, I was mentioning the Diet Coke story to the guy bagging my, I actually ended up at Costco a day later, had the guy who was boxing up my things, and I said, you know, no more Coke Zero. And I mentioned the story to him, right? And we both kind of looked at each other. I'm like, I give up. Like, I said, I'm just going to drink water. And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go into a dark room and drink water. Just be by myself. I don't know what to do now. It's hard to be healthy in modern society.
What bothers me more is the stories coffee's good for you and then the next day coffee's bad for you.
Yeah,
or
well,
caffeine
the
is good for you
different
or caffeine
people
is bad
doing
for
studies,
you.
Yeah. Different people are doing different studies that are focusing on different aspects of things, and that's why if you don't specialize in these areas, it's really easy to just glaze over.
I mean, there's never a story that says Diet Coke is good for you. So that one we kind of know, right?
No, but I mean, there is
those chemicals are bad.
But there are plenty of stories saying that, you know, that for 20 years, the research that they have has said that it's perfectly fine
sugar.
In small amounts. Not good if you like load up a mouse with 1,000% of what they, you know, what we consume.
Absolutely.
So, but I, you know, it's one of these things where like I knew in my gut, I knew in my gut that this was coming. I knew it was coming. Let's get some good news though.
Yeah.
10,000 steps. And I know that we've done stories and there's been different studies saying that that's an arbitrary number and maybe it's too much, but 10,000 steps, according to a new study, could really keep you from an early death, especially if you're sitting all day. Right.
Yeah.
So I think the takeaway, and I'm just going to guess that the takeaway is, you know, just be active, right? Get as much activity as you can. Because the question is, do you really need to take 10,000 steps a day? Although several studies have shown that you likely can stay healthy taking half as many of those, like 5,000. This new report finds that 10,000 is still a good goal for certain people, specifically those who sit around all day. Maybe you sit in a chair and do YouTube shows. Like, we got to get up and walk, right? A comprehensive study involving more than 72,000 individuals has unveiled that increasing a daily step counts could reverse the adverse health effects associated with prolonged sitting. And I know it's something I have to work on. It's like, especially when I worked in IT, when I worked in an office in IT, you have to sit in a chair. You're in a cubicle all day, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for you. When you work at a radio station, you're sitting in a chair all day. Researchers from the University of Sydney's Charles Perkins Center reveal a compelling link between higher daily step counts and lower risk levels of mortality and cardiovascular disease. Specifically, each additional step taken towards that 10,000 step a day mark correlated with a 39% reduction in death risk and a 21% decrease in the risk of cardiovascular diseases, irrespective of how much time was spent being sedentary.
Right.
So I think the takeaway here is just get as much activity as you can. You know, if you have bad knees, you know, if you're limited and you can't do 10,000 or you don't feel like you feel like that's too much, okay, maybe that's too much. Start with 5,000. Right.
Yeah.
I'm using my Apple app and I'm trying to get as many steps in as possible. And it does help keep weight off.
The more you move, the better you move, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't move it, you lose it.
If you don't use it, you lose it. You know, it helps with your digestion. Go on a go on a walk after a meal. Do something like that.
Heather says no one is consuming enough aspartame to cause any toxicity. Artificial sweeteners are nothing to be afraid of.
Well,
I don't know.
I think you got to stay tuned. I you can mark my words. Like, you know, they're already saying, you know, that it's not good for you. The more research they do, I have a feeling this is just my gut. This is just my gut. But I've seen enough over the course of my life that like anything that's too good to be true, there's some negative aspect to it, right?
Yeah. Lori says no. She thinks that 10,000 is an arbitrary number.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned that.
Yeah, just move your body and stand up and move a little.
But it is a good goal for a lot of people. My mother, you know, she's in her 80s and she does the 10,000 step goal. She has her watch. She's very proud because she gets a little fireworks display when on her watch when she reaches that 10,000. And she's the only healthy person among her siblings. So you know what? 10,000 a day works for her. She's perfectly healthy. Her cholesterol level, everything's healthy. You know, and she's active, and that's going to keep her alive.
Well, let's take a little break, and then when we come back, I'll talk about ancient tools found in Ukraine. And John has a story about Elon Musk and the new rules that may be coming to X. That's next on the After Party Live.
The After Party Live is underwritten by our audience, and without you, this show wouldn't be possible. For $1 a day, you could help feed a very moody 3-year-old cat with a taste for turkey and chicken. Every day across this world, cats go 30 minutes without food and don't know where to turn. Any dollar amount is appreciated and it all adds up. The PayPal link can be found in the About section of the YouTube channel or at the bottom of the show description. Thank you for your consideration.
Are you hungry? You want food?
A party where you don't even have to leave the house. You could be naked for all we care. The after...
Archie, do you want to say thank you? Archie, do you want food? Do you want a treat? Do you want to say thank you for the contributions?
Oh, Archie's like, no, I don't want to say thank you. No, that's really funny. Thank you to everyone who contributes to this show. You are really, really appreciated. And that includes ongoing contributors, Cynthia J., Gretchen L., Yvonne B., Sharon E., Beth F., and Kathy O. Thank you. Thank you.
And we want to thank Wes T. Coming through as he does every day. $5. Happy Monday, everyone. And Luis. $5 for Archie.
Awesome.
Meow. We'll get
thank
an extra treat
so
in there today.
Thank for you, your Louise. Generosity. That's really nice.
Yeah, we are crowdfunded. Every contribution makes a huge impact. We're a small budget operation, so we appreciate that. You know, and we have mentioned if you want to sponsor a segment of the show, such as the animal segment or a Weird News Wednesday or Travel Tuesday or Thursday Trivia, any contribution of $50 or more on PayPal will get you that. Jerry J gave us a $50 contribution. She wants to sponsor Weird News Wednesday, so we're going to have that this week. So thank you to Jerry J for her contribution as well. And Karen Cooper coming in with $250. Just seeing Archie makes my day.
Oh, Karen. Aww. That's nice.
Very cool.
Let's talk about these ancient stone tools found in Ukraine. And they are offering what researchers say is the oldest evidence of human presence in Europe. This is kind of cool. What you're looking at is a deliberately fashioned chipped stone dating back more than 1 million years. They think it was used by Homo erectus. I mean, would you grab that rock and think it's something special?
No, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was just saying, like, if I saw that, I would just think it was a rock on the
side
of the road.
Right, I would never have
known.
Okay,
it's volcanic. That's cool. Pumice.
How would you have known it was something special? I mean, gosh. So these ancient stone tools found in Western Ukraine apparently were deliberately fashioned from volcanic rock, were excavated from a quarry in Korolevo in the 70s. Thank you very much. Archaeologists use new methods to date the layers of sedimentary rock surrounding these tools to more than 1 million years old. It is, they say, the earliest evidence of any type of human in Europe that is dated now, 1 million years. They're not sure exactly which early human ancestors fashioned these tools. It might have been Homo erectus, which is the first species to walk upright and master the use of fire. But they don't have any fossil remains, so they're just not sure of this. The chipped stone tools were likely used, they think, for cutting meat. Maybe scraping animal hides is what they did with that. The researchers say that stone tools may be as old as 1.4 million years, but
perhaps cutting up their meat for their cat?
I don't think so. Maybe mashing it like a pounder? No. I don't know.
Okay. Like a pestle.
They say that the methodology suggests they might be just over 1 million. So 1 million, 1.5, I don't know. But they place them in just about the same date range as some other ancient tools that were uncovered in Spain. The earliest stone tools of this type were found unearthed in Eastern Africa. They date back to 2.8 million years ago. The Ukraine site is significant because it's the earliest site that far north, suggesting that the early humans who dispersed from Africa with these tools were able to survive in diverse environments. So that's pretty cool. They say the oldest humans with this old stone tool technology were able to colonize everywhere from warm Iberia, Spain, to Ukraine, where it's seasonally very cold. And that is an amazing level of adaptability. Yay, humans.
And I meant to say pestle, which is different than pustule, which is a blister. Oh. That's a whole different thing. Yeah, you don't want one of those.
It's not a pustule, no.
But what we do want to thank, Elise for $20.
Elise!
Archie, a taste for chicken and turkey.
Yeah, nice.
He's not into salmon anymore.
No?
He started out when he was younger. He liked salmon, but I think he's over it. But, you know.
Hey, our tastes change as we grow.
Thank you,
Elise. That's really cool of you.
Very cool. You know
and
what?
By the way, Elise had a really good comment on the Mark Thompson show earlier about some of her relatives and different nicknames for kind of, you know, mobster nicknames.
Oh, okay.
That was a good one. And I was trying to put it up, Elise, but I couldn't find the right spot.
Little Anthony. That's one of my favorite drops. Yeah. That was a story that we did. I gave Mark, and it was about all these mafioso guys that got busted in, and I think it was Long Island.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that like those stories ended up being drops.
Yeah.
A lot of them came out of Florida too.
Very cool.
The alcohol, the seriously, what the F, all those good times. This story though is about someone who's controversial. It's Elon Musk. Elon Musk said on Wednesday that his social media platform X is considering getting rid of showing the number of likes and reposts on each post. While speaking at the Morgan Stanley Technology, Media and Telecom Conference, Musk said X is a few months away from receiving approval for a money transmitter license in New York. The platform, formerly known as Twitter, is seeking to add money features to the app, which Musk has previously said would include the ability to send payments to other users. Receiving licenses in each U.S. state is a step toward building those features. Musk said the information could clutter content on X. Since taking over the company, he has also added the number of views to each post. Yeah, so the views and opinions, this is just a disclaimer. So what do you think about getting rid of the likes and the number?
I don't know. I mean,
the number of reposts.
You won't know how successful your posts are. You won't
and maybe
know
unless you pay.
If something's gone viral. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe you have to get a business account at that point. They're trying to make money. I think this has to do with the fact that they have this subscription model now. And they're probably going to add these features back later as a paid service, you know.
I don't know. Mars says, YouTube got rid of dislikes, but no outrage. So, I don't know. Dislikes is different, though, than, you know, monitoring the success of whatever it is you're posting.
Like the engagement,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you have a business or you're doing something, you're trying to engage.
That's why I think they're going to start charging businesses for that.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about another something found buried that's really old, this time in the Bay Area. An 8,000-year-old buried site discovered
Shen Yun?
Shen Yun.
Not Shen Yun.
Not
8,000 years of glory? No. Okay.
This site discovered on the San Francisco Peninsula.
Oh, wow.
The sample, pretty small, just 3 inches wide. According
How
to SF Gates,
this?
To the untrained eye, it looked like maybe more than some dark sandy dirt. I guess. I don't know.
How but did you wait? Look at
because
that.
Because when you're
look at that,
because,
and then look at that.
Because when you're analyzing things like this, you and you, it's part of
but
the
still
rules.
Still, you have to find it. Like
it's part of the. It's part of the rules that when you excavate a site where you know that something might have happened here and there might be, you know, Native American items, that you have to do samples, look in samples, right? Take a look at what you're digging up. And so when they looked at the sample, they found a few inches of sediment was proof of ancient human activity dating back nearly 8,000 years. The sample, they say, was long trapped under layers of bay mud and landfill and eventually San Francisco itself. But it seems that this is now the oldest evidence ever found of some newly formed San Francisco Bay's first inhabitants. It was found 40 feet below the surface. The sediment extracted through one of a dozen holes in the Mission Bay waterfront. It was extracted in 2018. Routine investigation commissioned by the California College of the Arts, which is building on this site, a private art and design school, right? They're expanding in this area.
I just want to quickly mention that these are shellfish that we're looking at that were recovered from the site.
Those are the shells recovered from the site, right? Yeah. They had a preliminary archaeological review by the planning department a year before the build started, and that identified the land as a potential area of archaeological significance. Though finding something here, there was not a very good chance of it. But one look at this sample, and archaeologists knew it was more than just old dirt. They found bone and rock fragments that appeared to be grainier terrestrial rather than marshy soil, suggesting that humans could have lived there. They call it one of the most significant sites that we have uncovered in the city of San Francisco. And they said they couldn't believe their eyes that we actually hit something here. And so now what are they going to do about it? They are still going to build there.
they're going to dump concrete on it?
I guess so. But they're going to put a sign up maybe that says, hey, something cool was here. I don't know.
Stuff was found here. So what we're looking at in this photo is a small rodent bone recovered from the site.
This was so long ago. It's not known exactly when the first people arrived in the bay. The uncovered shell mounds and skeletal remains suggest humans were present during the earliest days of the bay's formation. And so archaeologists believe that the region's native tribes, mostly the Ohlone, adapted their lifestyles to a changing environment, which they had to do. And they were, as you showed the picture, harvesting millions of oyster shells, clam shells, and so that's why so many shell mounds there, some dating back 5,000 years, others as recent as 1,000.
Do we know why the rodent bone is significant?
I don't know the answer. Wish I could tell you.
Sorry, I shouldn't have asked questions.
No, that's okay. I think maybe because it was mixed in with other things, or
yeah, it must have given a clue that of the activity that was going on at the time.
Right. And so they say there's feelings all over the place about this, but the best way maybe to protect it is to put concrete over it so it won't be disturbed, is what they're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting. That's one of my pet peeves with stories is when they introduce something like this, but then they don't tell you what the significance is. Mm. It's like, how hard is it to just tell us why it's important?
I know.
that's just my pet peeve. I have many pet peeves. Maybe that should be a segment. Pet peeves?
John's pet peeves.
We've talked about that. Maybe they, no, not mine, everybody.
Oh.
There's plenty out there. Very cool story.
Well, that college of the arts is doing an 82,000 square foot expansion that's set to open this fall. They're going to have new classrooms, housing, and green space, and they will pay permanent homage to the ancient site buried 40 feet below ground.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What's not cool for some people, although this doesn't really apply to me, the market for six-figure salary hybrid jobs has crashed. Oh, no. So hybrid jobs, of course, mean going into the office, like, what, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, maybe? Mm-hmm. And then being able to work from home. The higher the salary, the greater the likelihood that employees would not accept a job that requires them to be in office full time. This disconnect between what employers are offering and what highly paid workers want is causing tension in the return to office dance. And I think, didn't your husband go through this? Where they want employees to go back in the office, right?
Yep, they do.
They wanted you to go into the studio at some point, right?
Yeah, I had to go back.
Mm-hmm. Instead of working from home. Yeah. So high-paying hybrid work is here to stay. Or is it? Six-figure hybrid job availability crashed nearly 70%, while posts for in-person jobs nearly doubled, according to a new report.
Wow.
But six-figure and up workers are not taking the situation lying down. Video conferencing technology company Owl Labs' State of Hybrid Work 2023 report points to the notion that the higher the salary, the higher the likelihood that employees just would not accept a job that required them to be in the office full time. Higher income also made workers more likely to start looking for a new position that offers the flexibility of a hybrid position. This disconnect between what employers are offering and what highly paid workers want is causing tension. Employers, managers, and employees of all kinds are walking on glass at the moment. Leaders at many technology companies, including Boeing and UPS, have made it clear they want people back in the office. This is to make sure that they're maximizing the value of their employees, particularly in challenging economic circumstances. However, employees of all stripes, particularly higher paid workers such as research, notes, now know what it feels like to manage their personal and professional lives with hybrid flexibility, and they're not willing to give it up. Mm-hmm. Right, a lot of people, they're not willing to give it up, and all these bosses, they want their employees back in the office. I feel like this is going to be an issue for a while.
Gordon says, "I bet people who work from home spend more hours working."
I could see it going both ways.
Yeah, William says, "I'm 52 miles from the office, and I just made the cut." Yep.
I know a lot of people work from home and they get their work done in like a half an hour, and then they just do whatever they want the rest of the day. I think it really depends on the position. And some people just don't set boundaries and end up working 24/7, right, around the clock because they're dedicated. So I think a lot of it has to do with the work ethic and the discipline of the individual involved and the requirements put upon them. I know a lot of people's six-figure salaries, and it is ridiculous, especially in the medical field. A lot of the administrators, they don't really do a lot, and they get paid high six-figure salaries, and they get not only is his healthcare paid for, they pay him. Instead of him paying a premium for healthcare, they give him money, extra money.
Yeah.
And he can take as much time off as he wants.
Deals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Heather says, "I'm far more productive when I work from home." I'll say working from home, better rested, not wasting time on commuting, no noise distractions. Absolutely. I will say both my husband and I probably work more now that we're both working from home than if you go out in and you put in an 8-hour day, right?
Right. But then a lot of people are putting in the 8-hour day and then they're still getting emails from their boss.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or their talk show host.
Yeah.
After 4 p.m. when they were off.
Well,
allegedly. Yeah. So... it really depends on the situation, right? And whether or not you can set those boundaries. Do you find yourself, are you good about, are your husband and yourself, are you good about saying that
horrible
this is the time
boundaries.
I'm done?
I will fit in whatever I can, wherever I can, right? So if I know I need to do stuff, I just try to get stuff done in between kid things. When I'm waiting in a car, I'll be doing work and looking for stories.
Yeah.
So it's always, now I feel like I'm working all the time, but I am glad I don't have to drive into the city. So there's benefits.
Well, and that's good for the environment too. You're not burning gas unnecessarily going both ways. It's a long commute. Luis, with $5.
What?
Can we sponsor Archie? Does he have a social media presence? LOL. My friend
actually.
Maybe
he needs one. Yeah.
My friend 2 years ago said like, oh, these cats have huge followings. Your cat's, an attractive cat. Maine Coon, you should do a social media presence. And I felt like it would be exploitative, but maybe I'm just like treating him like a child. I don't know. Maybe for the show. I think a little bit for the show. But you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that parent that puts their kid out, and makes them be a child.
I think
child
with a
after.
Cat, it's okay. With human
yeah,
children,
but then they'll get
maybe
a catnip
not so
addiction.
Much.
They'll get a catnip addiction, and then they'll burn out. Yeah, I've got to be careful, right? Thank you, Luis. Appreciate it.
Can we talk about, I know this is kind of going to sound gross, butt milk? Do we have a time for that story?
Of course.
Okay, we'll end with butt milk, all right?
Wait. What milk? You said milk.
Butt milk.
Butt milk?
Butt milk.
Oh no, where is this going?
These legless egg-laying amphibians secrete milk from their butt.
I hope you're not eating lunch right now. Kim always does this.
She
does this to us all the time.
There's cow's milk, there's oat milk, there's goat milk, and now there's amphibian butt milk. Gross. No, you can't buy it. I'm joking. But there's a team of Brazilian biologists.
You think somebody's going to buy that?
No. They've documented legless subterranean amphibian mothers producing a milk-like liquid packed with fats and carbohydrates for their offspring. They posted this in the journal Science, March 7th. It's the first known instance of an egg-laying amphibian providing its babies with milk. And the findings, they say, show new bodily functions and possible complex communication in an understudied animal weirdo. That's what they call it. Is there butt cheese? There's a chance, John, that you could make the cheese out of the milk, and then, bingo, you're in business. Without the milk.
Josh saying buttermilk without the E.
That's funny.
Without the er.
But, you know, milk is mostly associated with mammals, right? And so it's interesting that they would find this. I guess some spiders and cockroaches produce milk for their young as well. The worm-like relatives of frogs, toads, and salamanders that primarily live in tropical areas sometimes do as well. But they didn't expect to find it here, I guess. These are ringed Sicilians. It's C-A-E.
Sicilians.
Oh, it's not spelled the same at all.
Mm-mm. They're not in the mob.
No, they're not mobbed up. Mm-mm. They're one of about 220 known Sicilian species worldwide, and they're a newest addition to the list of animals that provide milk. They're blind. They live very secretive lives under the soil and the leaf litter of South American forests and grasslands. And it seems they're one of the least well-understood vertebrates because of access to these animals being very difficult. Hard to find them. Researchers call them a surprise.
Why would you want to find them?
A surprise box. They're constantly offering up unexpected biological treats.
John Slade asking, you think they're going to tell you it's butt milk?
They better tell you it's butt milk. No. Here, little one, have my butt milk. No thanks. The words I never thought would come out of my mouth. The liquid is clear. It's the consistence of honey. And they secrete it from their milk vents, which is an all-purpose opening at the rear end of the body where waste and eggs are also released, along with their clear liquid honey butt milk. They feed their offsprings with milk from the butt.
John Watson asking, got butt milk?
Yeah. They give live birth. Some of them do, and some of them lay eggs. Mothers guard their broods very closely. They're good parents, I guess. Even after the young hatch and emerge as tiny, slimy little wiggling worms.
Well, they don't let them drink soda.
No, they don't. Mm-mm, no aspartame for you. The mom continues to invest about 2 months in parental care. She doesn't eat to ensure the babies are well fed. Mm-hmm. While raising their offspring, the mom's skin changes color, develops this fatty outer layer, and the offspring use special teeth to scrape it off as a meal. Ew! Like, just ew and interesting all at the same time, right? It doesn't cause any harm to the mother, they say, but it's clear they have more than just skin in the game. They're producing additional energetically costly food sources. Interesting.
Josh saying definitely chocolate milk.
Ew! Gross. Well, how's that for an ending to the show?
Oh, no, we're not ending there. That's gross.
Okay.
One more story. You do this to us all the time. Mm. We got plenty of time, actually. We're at 58.
TMI, Kim. TMI.
Google's shiny new Bay Area office reportedly has... What do you think their new Bay Area office has? It has terrible Wi-Fi.
Oh, no.
That's right. Google, which is actually a provider of Wi-Fi in many cities... In 2022, Google opened a new office called Bayview. It's sleek, futuristic, environmentally friendly. You just need to bring your own Wi-Fi hotspot. Employees in Mountain View at the first major office campus designed by Google itself might have expected ultra-fast internet connections, but Reuters, citing six people familiar with the matter, reported on Thursday that the campus has been plagued by months by inoperable or, at best, spotty Wi-Fi. Oh, no. Can you imagine all these tech people?
No. That'll never do. They're going to have to figure that out.
These tech people not getting Wi-Fi access. Google spokesperson confirmed the problem to SFGate in a Thursday email, although they promise a fix. We've had Wi-Fi connectivity issues in Bayview and made several improvements to address the issue. It will be resolved in the coming weeks. A lot of the workers were opting to use their phones as hotspots inside the buildings, and others have received new laptops with better Wi-Fi chops. Some managers point employees towards an adjoining cafe with a better signal. I just thought that was kind of amusing that one of the companies that's the backbone of the internet, internet search, and a provider of internet service across the country can't even get it right on their campus. Thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that will never stand. Now, the Googlers will say, no, we'd rather work from home than deal with spotty internet connection and Wi-Fi. They can't have that. No.
Do you want to do one more story? We've got four more minutes.
I will. How about this story? How many savings accounts do you have?
Active or just existing?
Just existing.
Oh, probably a total of five, maybe.
Wow. You have way more than I do.
Only two. Well, they're for various purposes, like travel.
That's what they say you should do.
Well, but mine's not for budgeting purposes. It's to avoid international transaction fees. Oh. And I also have an account for online savings because they have a better interest rate.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, this article says most people have maybe one savings account, but that people could really benefit from doing what you're doing, John Daly, which is having multiple savings accounts earmarked for different purposes.
Yeah. So this is a different reason.
They say the smart thing to do is to organize your money and help you stick to a budget that you've set for different purposes. So it could be a wedding fund, an emergency savings account that you have, a down payment on a house savings fund or savings account that you have. And the number of savings accounts you should have will depend on your specific goals and how willing you are to manage several accounts. So there's some tips that they're giving people about the annual percentage rate yield that you can get for certain savings accounts. But here's some that they suggest. Have a retirement savings account. Have an emergency savings account. Have a savings for a down payment on a home. Have a savings account for tuition for your children for school. Have a savings account for home maintenance or repairs, for purchasing a car, for paying for a vacation, and for having enough money for your upcoming wedding or event. All these are different accounts. I think I would lose track if I had that many.
Well, I mean, it's not that big a deal. I feel like, obviously, like I said, I have mine for different purposes. So I have I have some that are basically dormant. Right. And they become active when I go to Europe or go around the world because I have a Capital One bank account and there are no transaction fees. Mm-hmm. And the reason I keep that account is their debit card works in more places like automated ticket vending machines. Mm-hmm. Right. So I always have multiple cards because inevitably when you go around the world, one of your cards isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. So then I have others as backups, but I don't actively. I think I have two. I have our business account for this show. That's with the credit union. I have my own credit union account, and then I have an online bank account, and then I have an investment account, and then these other accounts that are for your travel.
I would say the only special one I set up a long time ago is I have a vacation fund. Oh no, I have a vacation fund and I have a Christmas fund.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So I have both of those. So
Gordon said too complicated.
It can get
well. Whatever works for you. Yeah. One thing that a lot of banks are offering. I think one of my accounts is Ally, which I recommend as an online bank. They usually have really good. They started out with a great rate, and now it's coming back up. I've had a good experience with them. If you just want to put your money someplace, you don't need a lot of customer service. They have a system called buckets, and I think you can mark, you could subdivide your account and have it marked with certain amounts. I think that makes more sense. And then you could have the categories, this is for this is for that, whatnot. Mm-hmm. What I have is just discipline.
Yeah.
I don't need budgets because it's all in my head. It's just, I'm relatively frugal, but, I've always been good about not spending too much.
Well, they say that the best banks make it easy to open and track multiple savings accounts, like you were just talking about, within the same bank. As long as you lay out clear goals and track where you deposit money each month, managing multiple savings accounts might not take as much time or be as confusing as you think. And they go on to talk about the different types of savings accounts. You've got the traditional, the high yield savings accounts, the health savings accounts. They consider a CD a savings account, which I consider more of an investment. A money market account, they think, is that a savings account? They think it's more of an investment. So
money market account's actually more like a checking account because usually you have a checkbook with that. A CD is like a, it's just a savings account, but it's like in the deep freeze. It's handled by a bank, right? It's a certificate of deposit. You can't take the money out. You'll just lose your interest that you've earned.
They say if you do this whole multiple savings account thing, you should be careful because you can end up paying fees and you don't want to do that.
Yeah. And whatever system works for you, you know, and the system that works for us is recognizing people when they've had a birthday. And apparently you didn't mention it, Kim, but Kay's birthday was yesterday. The big 5-0.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, it is the big 5-0.
Congratulations, Kay. That's a big one.
Yay. The big 5-0. Happy, happy, happy birthday, Kay. Huge birthday. Also, it's Eric's son's birthday today as well.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Eric's son. Yeah. Very cool. Well, we wanted to get your balloons up before the end of the show. So there you go. There are your balloons.
Love it. Hope you guys have a good rest of your day. We will be back tomorrow and we'll have a bunch of good stories for you, including CrossFit is out. Did you know it's out?
One day you're in, the next day you're out.
Next day you're out. We'll tell you more about that. And many more things coming up on the After Party Live.
Let's thank our ongoing contributors, Cynthia J, Gretchen L, Yvonne B, Sharon E, Beth F, Kathy O, and then we have our super stickers, Wes, Luis, twice Luis, nice. Karen, and Elise. Thank you guys. We appreciate it. Without your support, the show goes away. So thank you for supporting it. And have a great afternoon, Kim.
Yeah, have a good afternoon, everybody. Bye, John Daly. Bye, you guys.